Hello, Libra, and welcome to Good as Gold, your 2014 reading, mid-year reading, focusing on art and business and self-esteem. Some of these readings address the topics more directly, some address them more indirectly, but always with a mind toward, you might say, subverting anything that might block progress and encouraging anything that might lead to progress. So that is the intention that I'm coming in with, and it is quite amazing how different each of these readings is based on the orientation of each of the charts. Each one is off by one sign, and that basically changes everything. When we begin reading the astrology with Libra rising, we get a reminder that one vital, beautiful, challenging thing about Libra is that it is so oriented on partnership. It is not merely because it's the seventh sign, and the seventh sign is the opposite of the first sign, and Aries is the sign of I am, and Libra is the sign of we are. That's some of it. But there is more to this than that. Part of that more is Scorpio placed on your second house. Scorpio placed on the second house means that you are oriented on a shared value system. You are oriented on a deep degree of mutuality that may even be difficult to see your life as having any other possibility, because this is just the way that you have been for so long. So it's not only the we are factor, it is almost a we are one factor, and this is, of course, somewhat idealistic and also needs to be considered carefully in light of the independence that is necessary to do your thing on the planet and not need much permission from other people, to not depend on that and to not always, you know, have to have others around you to take up certain elements of what you're doing. There is, I think, all art and true entrepreneurship has a very deep root into self-sufficiency. Now, no one's really self-sufficient. I mean, if you take notes with a pencil on a piece of paper, you can think, well, I did that myself, but somebody made that paper and someone made that pen or pencil and got it to where it was going. And so even in something as simple as, taking notes, actually, if you look at everybody who was involved, you'd have enough to probably fill a large meeting room with them. And you'd think it was all you, but it really wasn't. Now, with your particular orientation, the deep spot is the value self-esteem theme of the second house. The second house, the sign after your sign, acts as an extension of your sign. And if that first house has an I am quality, the second house has a quality of I value myself for these reasons. I approve of myself for these reasons. This is my understanding of myself. This is the code that I live by. But there's nothing about Scorpio that is really independent of other people. Scorpio has a profound intermingling that begins when all the DNA shuffles at the moment that we're conceived. We're straight away in Scorpio land when we get that genome going. Because I believe that I've seen some good clues that the genome is a scorpionic type of concept. It's clearly a function of sexual reproduction, which, among other things, are the keynotes of Scorpio. And so if you think of that self-esteem process as being a kind of a genetic process requiring two sets of chromosomes, well, where does that leave you when you want to be independent? I think where it might leave you is recognizing the dependency that we all have on other people and using that dependency in a conscious way. Scorpio would call forth that necessity as well, because Scorpio has a tendency to live below the boards, to live below the immediate threshold horizon of consciousness. And Scorpio is, you know, doing its evolutionary work when things are being brought to the light. And so the thing to bring to the light about yourself is the extent to which you are commingled with the feelings of others to make up your feelings about yourself. Now, this makes a great scenario for Libras when partnering is good. It can be amazing. I think that this setup, perhaps unique in all the zodiac, grants the ability to have partnership that is so deep that it is incomparable. It would be completely unique. And by that I mean a true fusion of an utterly never before seen or heard from type of creative enterprise. So that is possible also. But before you get there, you must distinctly be your own set of chromosomes, your own approach to reality, your own independent thought pattern, and let that independent thought pattern meet with and commingle with the independent thought patterns of others. And of course, very rapidly, there is a change and a kind of a fertilization, and something new happens. And this potential is so rich in your psyche that it is hard to imagine your thinking that life would be possible or very good without it. And it's difficult, I think, to imagine someone with a strong Libra signature in their chart thinking that it's enough to merely love yourself. There must be that bonding. There must be that affirmation. Now, this is a kind of a keynote of our times, and I think that this is romanticized, and it's partly responsible for the overemphasis on relationships that is inherent, seems to be through most cultures. I have not been to that many countries, maybe 10 or 15 countries, but I've never been to a place where there wasn't this very strong emphasis on relationship. But some places allow for more independence, and including sexual independence and emotional independence and creative independence. But I will tell you that the United States, in my opinion, is not one of them. And I think that though deep bonding and the deep alchemy of co-creation is in your DNA, that it would be worth considering reality from the viewpoint of what you want to do on your own, knowing that you require support. Someone made that pencil, someone made that paper, but what can you do without that ideal state of perfect fusion? Okay, so in terms of how to organize this reading, let's see here. The premise that I'm basically working with is that the three houses that work together to create someone who is effectively creative and also can do it as a matter of business and as a matter of reputation are houses two, which is value, available resources, values. That's where Scorpio is. The sixth house, which is about your well-being and your day-to-day work and the services that you perform, and that would be Pisces. And then the 10th house, which is your reputation and your drive to achievement and a statement about your highest potential, and that would be the sign Cancer on your 10th house. Now, what these three have in common is that they are water signs. And water signs are going to present an empathetic view, worldview, an empathetic orientation on existence. And I will say that that is generally not the fuel that makes success possible in Western civilization. Usually, it is a very strong competitive nature. It is the ability to distinguish oneself from others rather than to blend in so effectively, which water signs grant, is that ability to blend in. It is not sensitivity. It is lack of sensitivity that usually makes success in some way. And sadly, it is not about helping people most of the time that makes success, but rather about doing whatever you can do to get over on them. And that is not your style at all. Far to the contrary, your whole being is oriented on nourishing people, and all aspects of your work are oriented on nourishing people. That would be Pisces on the 6th, the services you perform, and Cancer on the 10th, your reputation, your goal, your highest ambition. Again, the sign Cancer, this is about nurturing and nourishing and raising critters and taking care of people, sometimes many people in the case of the 10th house. And I would say that remember, if this happens to be true for you, that your orientation is a nourishment-based orientation. You pretty much have to give to be happy. You must offer yourself with generosity and know that there is going to be some result that happens. It's not merely enough that you collect your money and punch the clock and go home. You are concerned about the repercussions, the effects, the benefits of what you do pretty much all the time, and that's partly because you are capable of such a depth of feeling and such a depth of being able to resonate with both what is going well on the planet and what is going terribly on the planet. And I would reckon that there's very little that's going terribly that you can't feel and that you are not concerned about and that does not trouble you in some way. And this would be wise to acknowledge and to put to work for you, to connect to what you're doing in some way. And while I don't think you're necessarily going to be doing humanitarian work, whatever you do needs to have that humanitarian streak to it, that element of it that certainly is not anti-humanitarian, that does not contribute to oppression in any way, but that facilitates improvement and sharing, and that, you know, gives people some relief from the human condition rather than perpetuating it. And, you know, the human condition's been going on for a long time. I mean, you would think that a lot had changed here in you know, well now into the 21st century. That's quite a while. Our calendar goes back 2,000 years, just our calendar, and older ones go back, you know, the Mayan calendar and so forth. But when you look at even what happened to the Mayans, when you look at what happened to numerous civilizations, it was often division and greed and the propensity to war that led to the downfall of these civilizations. And it just seems like when people concentrate power, that the thing that they want to do is conquer and make war. That, again, is not your style. If there's anything Libra is not, it is that. You would be the one saying, well, there has to be diplomacy. What about, you know, when was the last time someone went to the United Nations World Court in The Hague? There is actually a court in The Hague that is used not just to try war criminals. That's a different court. I mean the United Nations World Court in The Hague in the Netherlands, which is about settling disputes between countries by reasoning and argument. That sounds worth trying, I would say. And you don't ever hear about, you know, any cases going before this court. I mean, I think the last time I heard about any cases going before that world court in The Hague was when I was physically present there. I mean, I made sure that I got my body into that building and actually sat down with a press official at the table where the justices sit it is possible to resolve conflict without killing, and indeed, it's the only way to resolve conflict because killing just makes the conflict worse. And so anything that you would do that would offer yourself in the service of conflict resolution would be a beautiful thing. Now, fortunately, just studying the placement of these three houses, Scorpio, I would say, is made of, well, it's ruled by Mars, and Scorpio is kind of like, I like to joke about, you know, people with strong Scorpio preferring to go to the dentist but not get anesthesia. Scorpio can pretty much withstand anything, and with Scorpio on the second house, you're made of tougher stuff than you let on. You seem like a pleasing person who's non-confrontational and all that, but underneath that, there is a real durability and the power to withstand duress and difficulty and to not run out of gumption when the going gets tough. Now, the other two water signs are not slouches in terms of the ability to be flexible and to withstand things. Pisces, for example, seems to be infinitely flexible and patient and be able to, you know, provide the kind of water energy that wears down the land and forms canyons. And then Cancer is the sign of all things maternal, and we know the power of mother to make things happen in the world. I really wish that we could use the power of mother to stop the young people from going to war. I think that it is mothers who need to raise their children to object to war and who need to object to their children being taken into war. I don't know how many men we're going to get to object to this unless we get a very large generation of men who have been raised to not support this kind of effort. And, you know, the thing is that a lot of people who are born male-bodied seem to be born warriors. You have a friend named Nikki who became a psychologist, and she had a young boy, and I remember bumping into her at a picnic, and her kid, who was about maybe 4 or 5 years old, was having some kind of like imaginary sword fight using two swords, which were sticks, but still, he was fighting with two swords. And she said, "This kid's never watched TV. He doesn't go to movies. I'm a complete peace-loving hippie, and my kid is fighting with two swords. What is this about?" Worth pondering, I think. Okay, so we see here that your houses that are generally associated with business, 2, 6, and 10, resources and money, 2, the work you do every day, the service you perform, your basic job, house number 6, and your career, reputation, power, ascent to fame or ascent to notoriety or to authority, Cancer, those are the houses that are the least likely to be granting the kinds of competitive gifts that you can usually get ahead with the exception of Scorpio. And you should know that you have a resource, a deep well of the ability to be as competitive as you need to be. I think competition is best used as a tool, kind of like speeding on the highway. You know, it's like one thing to, you know, cruise along at 75 with the other cars. And then if you have to go 90 for a while to pass somebody, sure, you do that. But you don't need to drive 90 the whole time, like some people from Massachusetts or New Jersey, for example. You can just use that ability to go fast and then get back in the right lane. The right lane? Right, the right lane. That right. And know that your extra power boost is a tool that you can use when necessary. This is how Scorpio works in your chart. And part of that power is the ability to summon the energy and the resources of others as if they were your own. So you have that as a tool as well. And one of the things that prevents many people from getting anywhere, seemingly, is their ability to conjure up the resources that they need to do that. And, you know, you have that ability. Okay, let's consider the theme of the Leo placement in your chart, which is quite good. Maybe the best one of all. I know when I picked the Planet Waves chart, I chose to cast the chart with Libra rising and Cancer on the 10th house, Aries on the 7th, and Capricorn on the 4th. So it's the exact configuration of the Libra solar chart, and that puts Leo in the 11th house. And Leo is a great sign to have in the 11th house because Leo, first of all, represents so much energetic potential. There is so much available there, especially now with Jupiter and soon to be Venus and Mercury and the Sun in Leo, amping up Leo greatly, and in the 11th house, which is considered, at least by the ancient astrologers, to be the most beneficial of the houses, especially if you aspire to do great things. So the more upward reaching you are, and the more that you activate the 10th house in your chart, which is Cancer, the more you will then gain the benefits of the 11th house, which is, you could say, the second of the 10th, the one right after the 10th. Hence, it is a house of financial resources that come from the work that you do, assuming it is the real work. And so there's often that journey in people's lives where they are they do things and they do another thing, and it's like always looking for the real work. Now, one thing about your real work is, if we're talking about the 10th as giving a hint about what that is, because the sign Cancer is there, there is a cyclical nature to that. And there is no way to work against the tides. I mean, the tides are going to happen, and all you can do is design your marina and your seaport and your shipping lanes and your schedule, you know, all that to correspond with the tides. And this is the way that it is necessary for you to work with your 10th house. Your highest ambition is likely to cycle. It's likely to change. It's likely to be very consistent in its cycle, that you keep coming back to certain things, and you need the kind of creative profession where you get to cycle, such as do a different thing every day or a different thing every week, and keep that energy moving and keep it refreshed so that you do not stagnate. Now, this not stagnating thing also shows up in Scorpio on your second, where Scorpio has, I think of all the water signs, it has the concept of stagnation built into it because it has that composting breakdown into the raw elements, the recombining into new elements. It's possibly an image out of DNA where there's a RNA recombination, mixing, shuffling of the deck all the time. But even that is an active process of the chemistry actually happening. And so where these water houses are involved, you really want to make sure that you maintain a flow and that you avoid the sensation of getting stuck by maintaining a flow. This is important to remember if you are in any kind of a job that requires you to do something that might be monotonous or have to be extremely consistent. Don't torture yourself or anyone else if they're depending on you for consistency and you need to give them something that is cyclical. Look for the work if you need work that is outside of what your, you know, direct passion is, that allows you to follow that cyclical nature of your being, that allows you to keep a flow. And I think that most important, allows you to work in an environment that is harmonized with you, that is comfortable for you. Because your sixth house in Pisces indicates that you are extremely sensitive to your work environment, and there's no way that you can be in a work environment that you don't like to be in, for whatever reason that might be. It might be the fluorescent lights, it might be the way the formaldehyde coming out of the carpet smells, it might be that the room does not have any plants, it might be that it has a view of a parking lot. You have to be very picky about the environment in which you work and know the limits in a way similar that, you know, people who are working on a toxic cleanup know there's only so long they can spend in the place. If you have to enter an environment that you perceive or register as being a toxic environment, make sure that you time that and you know how long you can endure things for. One indication of cancer on the 10th house, by the way, is the very real potential that you would do your very best work at home. And so some form of the executive suite existing in your home or very close to your home, say, for example, in some form of an outbuilding or the grandma apartment above the garage or right at the kitchen table, that is the offers a possibility of really getting a lot done. I know a great many people who've done their very best work, who've really accomplished a lot working at the kitchen table. And if there was ever a kind of a cosmic little jab in the ribs, haha, isn't that funny? That would be the sign Cancer on the 10th house saying, yes, you might actually conquer the world of whatever, be it art or something, music, from your kitchen table, and you will rise to the top just as the tea kettle is going off and you step away from your laptop to pour yourself a cup of tea. Okay, let's let me read from my notes here. We've talked about relationship and the ways in which there is an overemphasis on relationship in our culture, but that for you it is something of a magic formula to use as a tool. One thing that is really kind of interesting and parallel worldish of having Libra as your first house and Scorpio as your second is that it presents you with having Aries as your seventh, the relationship house, and Taurus as your eighth, the house of the bond that happens, the contractual bond that happens in relationships, the deeper bond. It's when the relationship goes from like, this is great, let's do this for a while, to the my family is part of your family, till death do us part, my money is your money, all that stuff that happens in what we think of as a marital relationship. The contractual element of that is contained in the eighth house. And one thing that is kind of beautifully contradictory about the Libra emphasis on relationship is that it has a way of happening with people who don't necessarily have that emphasis on relationship, who might not seem to outwardly appreciate the partnership or need the partnership as much as you do. And it's well worth considering that kind of differential and not, for example, letting yourself be distracted by the fact that you seem to be more concerned about the actual relationship part of things or the partnership part of things than your partners do. They're depending on you for that quality, and you're depending on them for their independence. There's a perfect mirroring going on there between the, your drive to create situations where there is dependency, hopefully healthy dependency, and their drive to exist within those relationships, but also to be as distinct of an individual as they can be. And I suggested if you know people like that, it would be great to learn from them and to, observe the way in which they make their decisions and to what extent they really do factor you into the equation. You may discover that you mean a lot more to them than they think, than you think that they think that they do. So people have a way of not necessarily letting on the depth of their attachment. But with Taurus on the eighth house, you can assume that people to whom you are bonded have a significant attachment to you and have a reason to stay in the relationship and to make the relationship mutually beneficial, which is ideally the goal of any relationship. Now, one thing I'd like to present here is under the general heading of strategies for success. Libra is reputed as being a sign that is associated with appearances. I have noticed this. I have noticed that pretty much anything with Libra prominent in the chart has an almost an obsession with presentation and with beauty. And that does not have to undermine any commitment to quality. It's just that the quality doesn't matter as much if the presentation is not there. And part of this comes from Libra itself, but part of it comes from the fact of having Leo on the 11th house. And with Leo on the 11th house, the message there is that you will thrive on visibility. So stay visible and make sure that people can see what you do and they can find you, and that you be confident in public, that you be confident presenting yourself in any way, and that you depend upon a certain measure of popularity for your success. People will see you as a star without very much effort, but it's exactly the kind of star that you want to be seen as, which is to say someone who is visible, but where there is substance and not just image. So there'll be the usual beauty and presentation that comes along with Libra, but then there are other factors involved that grant a measure of substance. And so the beauty of Libra is that the visibility is merely a reflection of, the presentation is merely a reflection of what resides on the inside. Now, in a similar light, the relationship between Leo and Aquarius is a pretty crucial one in your chart, because Aquarius is the sign that is on the fifth house, which is the house of what I think of as being the art studio. And Aquarius on this house is saying, well, first of all, there is likely to be a lot of collaboration. That's another image of Libra being a collaborative enterprise, but that the collaboration is likely to produce you as the spokesman for something, you as the one who is the visible face, or there are people, you know, there's a team or a collective working in the background, and then you are the one who presents yourself to the world and represents that thing. And so the collaboration with a team is crucial, especially on the larger forms of success. But maintaining your independence on that theme, again, that is so essential, that you not lose yourself to any of these partnership or collaboration factors, but that you strive to maintain your independence in the midst of the experience, and then emerge as the independent, visible expression of that thing, as a kind of a spokesperson or the salesperson, or the one who demonstrates it, or the one who gets to introduce it to the world, or the person whose voice and face is associated with whatever it is that you're doing. That will feed the visibility equals success factor, and certainly dressing the part of success, presenting yourself as if already successful, will be essential to that success, and in some kind of fun way, working your way backwards from what does success look like, what does it feel like, what does it do, or making sure that you understand that success implies responsibilities, it implies a certain flow of resources. What do you have to do to open yourself up to that flow of resources? What energetic adjustments do you need to make internally to be able to be a sufficiently wide conduit to carry that much energy? Alrighty, with the time remaining, I'd like to focus on one main additional point, which is the theme of money and resources and what it means to have Scorpio and Taurus placed along your second and eighth houses, the axis of money and resources. Now, there is perhaps a misunderstanding about the Scorpio-Taurus axis, which happens to be, I think, if you look at the astrological theory behind those two signs, it really is the theory that runs economics on both the macro level and the micro level. It's all about resources, whose is what, whose belongs to what. I've got mine and you've got yours. Okay, this is ours, but who's really in control of it? And there is often a kind of a miserly quality about the way that the Scorpio-Taurus axis responds when it is put under any economic duress, any necessity to actually perform. It can somewhat underperform due in part to a zero-sum game approach, that is to say winner and loser approach, as well as a sense of limitation, which is similar to zero-sum game, in terms of how much there is in the way of resources. It's also given to power struggles, which I think is something that, you know, had best be worked around or avoided. And so one of the things I would encourage you to do is to take a generous approach in terms of how you plan to structure and fund your projects. This requires realism. It requires planning. It requires being resourceful and gaining access to resources. And we know you have the ability to do that, that you can pull out. But mainly it means not being cheap, at the same time not being a spendthrift. So that's a fine line to walk for some people. Often it can seem like, well, if we're going to do this right, we've got to spend all the money that we have. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I am talking about is the idea that to do this right, we have to fund things adequately, and we have to build up our, the systems that are used to a level that will perform adequately under the circumstances, and under, you know, to meet the needs of whatever is going to happen. And that also requires some conservation of cash and attentiveness to cash flow, but not, going to an excess with it. So there's a real balance that needs to be struck. And often what happens with things on the Taurus-Scorpio axis is that they'll go to one extreme or the other, the extreme of, you know, spend everything and let's get everything versus we don't really need to, let's not do this right. And so it's up to you to make sure that there is an adequate balance that is kept. One of the skills in a capitalist environment where there's not necessarily that much capital to go around is, first of all, getting some capital, getting supporters involved, whether that means clients or whether it means investors or whether it means a relative helping, and also making sure that in the process of that, getting that investment, that there is not an undue amount of control that is ceded over the whole enterprise. Because one of the problems with people investing capital is that they tend to want control, but not all of them. Some just want to see a good thing happen. Some want an eventual profit. Some want to get their principal back. There's a lot of different approaches that people making an investment can take. But you have the ability to access this and to make contact with potential investors, just something that is kind of inbred into you. And because your personal presentation is so good. And certainly, even if you like to get out of bed and put on sweatpants, you know that you can clean up real nice and make a compelling presentation. And I suggest that you keep that in your bag of tricks and know when to use it. That would include any form of a visual presentation as well, and make your stuff look like it's worth something. Really dress it up as if it it is. Don't hide the value of who you are, what you're doing, or what you are presenting, and work with this form of collaboration. I assure you, you present a compelling image and a compelling presentation that is seen for the depth that it has, that's not just seen as the skin on the outside. And more than anything, though, your values toward resources are the thing that is likely to run the show in a lot of ways. Your values toward how money and resources are thought of. And there's so much about finances that is philosophical, that's based on the idea of how one works with money and how you work with limited amounts of money, with very large amounts of money, sometimes working with none or very little. Of course, there's really rarely ever none, even in the case of people who are very poor. There's always some to go around. And there's a thing about people who are involved in artwork or things of a spiritual nature that tends to gravitate toward a certain poverty consciousness. And I think of all of the, you know, the true enemies of creativity and the true enemies of wholesome, loving enterprise is poverty consciousness. It is up to you. It is vital that you embrace in your heart the concept of enough, the concept of having enough to do what you need to do. And this is a stretch for some people, because there is often the reticence to open up to that, to embrace that. And that can close off a lot of possibilities and, kind of put a blindfold over in the way of seeing things that would really be very supportive. And often there are deep values in the way of accepting resources and of having access to resources. And, you know, they range from money allegedly being the root of all evil to we've got to print something up, and that printing something is going to consume resources. And in a sense, that's making pollution, because all those printed things, even though they're so beautiful when they come off the press, are sooner or later going to end up in the garbage or in recycling. And so there can be various shades of environmental guilt. And also, there's now kind of a new, scourge going around, which is people getting down on themselves and on one another for this concept of privilege. And there's no easy answer to this, except I will offer one that I think is a coherent one, which is that incarnation itself is a privilege, and that no matter what era of history on Earth we humans have lived through, there have been people who have had more, there have been people who have had less, there have been people who did nothing with all that they had, there have been people who did amazing things with very, very little. Writers who have written their best work when they could barely afford paper to write on. And yes, there have been people with the equivalent of mountains of gold or billions of dollars who have really avoided helping very much of anyone at all. And so the measure of resources is not the measure of one's effectiveness. But while we are living in a society where there is a fair amount of liquid capital, because it just happens to be a society that has an economy that is based on moving the money around as quickly as possible, it's always possible to figure out ways to get in the flow. What's necessary is to adjust your value system in such a way that you are open to that flow, that you recognize the hidden kind of values traps that may have been passed along by family, or that may have been put into you by religion, that you do your best to defuse those bombs before they affect you or the people that you're working with or serving in some kind of a negative way. The truth is, there is enough, and it helps to know what you need. For example, to make a budget and to have a spending plan, to have a goal for, you know, you need to set up this particular office, it's going to cost this much money. You need to, whether you have it or not, you need to set up this, website, it's going to cost this much money, whether you have it or not. And then once you know that, you figure out how to get it. You figure out how to monetize it, and you proceed in logical steps. It's not magic how this allegedly mysterious thing called success happens. Often it is meticulously planned, even though the plan changes. And often, even though people would not necessarily have done what they did if they knew what it would take, you should know that often, I have no easy way out of this, success takes your work and your devotion, your persistence, and, you know, your investment of yourself, and vision helps a lot. Having a vision, being able to see something, which is why it's important to make a list of all the things you need in that pottery studio, and to know how much the very best kiln and the second best kiln and the third best kiln costs, and know where you'll draw the line and really work with a plan and construct what you're doing in a fully conscious and coherent and self-loving way. All right, just a few thoughts to think about for you there, and I'm ever curious what, you know, things or concepts of beauty that you come up with. I have a thing for Libra rock stars. I may get to finally do my Libra rock star article this autumn. I've wanted to do this one every year for a while, but some of my favorite rock stars are Libras. They really have a way of being somewhat unassuming and then pulling it out when it really counts, and that would be you. All right, have fun. I'll catch you over at your sign rising and in the conference call associated with the Good as Gold product. So save your questions, write them down, and then save them for when we send out that announcement. That will be in probably the third or fourth week of August. Alrighty, bless and bye for now.